Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
You can join the museum. I'm speaking about an event that's coming up in Chicago in the very near future. The Holocaust Museum community in Chicago to learn more about the urgent work to keep Holocaust memory alive in a challenging world. I'm reading from something Elif just handed me, which describes a luncheon that's going to be at the Sheraton Grand Hotel on September 9th. Our guest, Deborah Lipstadt, who's an author of many books you've heard of, I'll give you some of them in just a second, will be speaking at the What You Do Matters 2019 Risa K. Lambert Chicago Luncheon. You may have heard some promos about that here on WGN Radio in the last couple of days. It's an event that's right around the corner. Our guest is on the phone right now. She has written, by the way, Denying the Holocaust, History on Trial, My Day in Court with a Holocaust Denier, and the Eichmann Trial. Deborah, welcome to the show. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Thank you, John. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, no kidding. I must tell you that there's a lot of people that are very excited about your visit to Chicago. I've been hearing from them. I know they're glad you're on the phone with us today, but when you come to town to talk, I know there's going to be a very warm and receptive audience for you here.
Thank you. I love Chicago, so I'm looking forward to it.
You give talks like this around the country, I presume the world. What's your message?
Actually, I've been giving them around the world since my latest book came out, Anti-Semitism Here and Now, because people are very concerned. They're concerned about what's going on. They're concerned about the rise in hate in general. They're absolutely shocked by the rise in anti-Semitism worldwide from the right and from the left. Neither political side has a monopoly on it. And the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, which is sponsoring in Washington, which is sponsoring this luncheon, asked me to come and sort of give people an understanding of what is precisely anti-Semitism, how do we recognize it, and how might we explain what's going on today? Where did this come from? What is it about? And is there anything we can do about it?
Where do you begin to answer that question?
Well, I think anti-Semitism, you know, every stereotype, racism, homophobia, doesn't matter what group you're targeting, has certain elements associated with that stereotype. And when you're talking about anti-Semitism, it usually has something to do with money, power, and a conspiracy theory. Not just money and power, but a conspiratorial nature on the part of Jews to try to control the world, to try to do things for their own advantage, to other people's disadvantage, which of course is kind of strange because Jews are amongst the most generous groups in the world and helping others, etc. But it doesn't matter. That's a logical thing. The anti-Semite, as with anybody who's prejudiced, think about the word prejudice, prejudge. Don't confuse me with the facts. I've made up my mind. I see a black person, a brown person. I see a gay person. I know what they are. I know who they are because I know the stereotype. So we're seeing it all over. I think it's very important, as I said a moment ago, to recognize we're seeing it on the right, on the far right. We saw it in Charleston with the chanting, Jews will not replace us. We saw it in Pittsburgh less than a year ago. We saw it in San Diego. They just recently arrested someone in Ohio, a man in Ohio, who had a list of Jews he was going to try to assault, and a JCC, a Jewish Community Center, he was going to attack. So we see it on the right very directly, and not just among people who will pick up guns and go and kill people and harm people, but in a way of conversation, words, you know, and every genocide, doesn't matter against whom, begins with words. So words count. I think that's one of the messages that the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum has sort of enshrined in its objectives. You know, words count, words matter. And then we see it on the left. We see it on the left in the BDS, the Boycott the Vest Sanction Movement against Israel. And I'm not talking about criticism of Israeli policies. Criticism of Israeli policies is absolutely acceptable. You want to hear criticism of Israeli policies, go to the Israeli Knesset, the parliament, and you'll hear criticism of policies. But I'm talking a sort of out of whack, out of kilter blame of the whole Middle East situation on Israel alone, seeing this as the only human rights problem in the world when there are so many others. Not to say that that makes it okay, but still, when there's this myopic, singular focus just on this issue, you have to ask where that's coming from.
I'm glad you brought that up. Finish that thought. I had a question for you, but keep going.
Oh, sure. I think when people have a myopic view, when they see this only about one side, one country, one issue, you have got to ask what's going on here. And often, not always, but often the case is a kind of repurposed anti-Semitism.
Well, I wonder if, too, then your cause is not just about anti-Semitism as we would define it, but also about other prejudices against groups you mentioned, people of color or for certain other religious persuasions, et cetera, et cetera.
Absolutely, absolutely. Look, you can't fight one ism and not fight other isms. You know, you can't say I'm only concerned about a persecution of a particular group or a prejudice against a particular group. You know, what often historians of anti-Semitism and people have looked at it say, it may start with the Jews, but it doesn't end with the Jews. Or it may start with other groups, and it'll come around and hit the Jews eventually.
Well, do they have similar solutions? That is, if we could figure out how to persuade people not to judge Jewish people, could we similarly persuade people not to judge blacks or Catholics, et cetera, et cetera?
I think we can try. I don't know that we can solve the problem, certainly of anti-Semitism, because it's purposely, it's rightfully often called the oldest or the longest hatred. It's been around for so many years that to suggest that you can cure it, I think, may be a little simplistic. But you can do certain things about it. I talk about becoming the unwelcome guest at the dinner party. Now, you sit down to dinner and the host or hostess says to you, Uncle XYZ is here or someone is here and they're a racist, they're an anti-Semite, just ignore them, we're going to have a nice party. You can have a nice gathering, a nice holiday gathering, whatever it is. We can't do that. We can't afford to do that. It's just things have gotten too extreme to let that kind of talk go by without questioning it. Not to change the mind of the person who was engaging in that kind of talk, but for the young people around the table to say, this is not acceptable. And I think politicians as well, and here I'm talking on the right and on the left, Democrats and Republicans, have engaged in these kind of sweeping analogies. We have some freshman members of the Congress on the Democratic Party, and we have, sadly, the president who has engaged in certain things, maybe not knowingly so. I'm not saying that our president is an anti-Semite, but I think that on occasion he has emboldened the anti-Semites, emboldened the prejudiced people. When you make fun of people with disabilities, when you label people, when you talk about Jews being disloyal, it plays into prejudices. And I think, sadly, for a variety of reasons, people who are extremists on the right then who would sort of, you know, they might talk about quietly amongst themselves now feel that they can say things publicly.
Well, let's just talk about those two cases. The one is the Democrats, the two in particular, who have embraced the boycott, this an acronym, there's four letters and there's all actions.
BDS, but boycott the best sanction.
Sanction. Okay, so there's that. And then there's also the president who's calling into question the loyalty of Jews in Israel or Jews in the United States who...
In the United States.
Who don't agree with him on this issue. Do do Jews or Americans have a call to be loyal to the president's view or even to America? Or can they disagree because that's where their head or their heart is?
Well, I don't know any take a group of Americans, go out, you know, on LaSalle Avenue or Street, I forget which one it is, and gather up, you know, 30 Chicagoans, and they'll have different views. We don't all agree. That's the beauty of this country. You can disagree about certain policies and still remain fiercely loyal to this country. But the disloyalty charge is something that's been part of anti-Semitism for millennia, for at least centuries, I can trace it back to, you know, the 18th century easily, that Jews aren't loyal, to this country. They're only loyal to other Jews or to Israel or things like that. Many Jews may love Israel. They may support Israel. They may be energized by the existence of Israel, the creation of Israel, but that doesn't make them disloyal, just like Irish people. God, Chicago should know that, you know. I know many Irish who love Ireland, who get a thrill out of visiting Ireland that a non-Irish person doesn't get, that it's sort of a homecoming. Even Ronald Reagan, John F. Kennedy, when they went there, talked about the feeling of coming home. But that doesn't question their loyalty to the United States. And on the left, I think these congresswomen have engaged in overt anti-Semitism. I don't think they represent the face of the whole Democratic Party, but they are very, what they have said is very problematic. You know, there's been a whole brouhaha the past couple of weeks with their going to visit Israel. I think they should have been allowed to come. I think it gave them too much publicity. But I don't think their purposes in visiting were so benign. I mean, they were going with a group that has engaged in overt anti-Semitism. They weren't meeting with any Israel. They were talking about to get a view of the total situation, but on their agenda were only meetings with Palestinians. Mm-hmm. They were going to potentially whip up trouble, whether actual things happening or just incur hatred. So neither side, nobody involved in that acquitted themselves smartly in this, or well, in this situation.
Deborah Lidstadt's on a phone line. She's going to be in Chicago on the 9th at the Sheraton Grand Hotel. She'll be speaking at the, is it Riza or Riza K. Lambert Chicago Luncheon? What You Do Matters. Riza, and tickets are available at ushmn.org. I'll pass that information along again in just a second. I want to go back for a second, too. Your latest book, by the way, is Anti-Semitism Here and Now. You said that if you're in a situation where somebody is saying something that is problematic, they're maybe at the dinner you described, saying anti-Semitic mm-hmm. things or bad things about blacks or other groups, you said you have an obligation, or the best way to play that scene would be to confront them, not because you think you're going to change their mind, but because maybe other people around will get the sense that this is not to be tolerated. We need to confront it. Maybe the kids will get an appreciation. Well, I wonder how you confront that person. What's the tenor of your voice? What are the words that you use in a scene like that?
Yeah, it's so hard. Usually we've got the perfect answer in the middle of the night after it's happened. You know, we wake up. I should have said, you know. I think first of all is to try to remain calm. I think to point out often the absurdity in what they're saying. You know, sometimes the anti-Semite will say, oh, Jews are so clannish, they stick together, they never want to be with other groups. And at the same time, the anti-Semite will say, oh, Jews are always pushy, they're pushing their way into areas that they're not wanted, groups that they're not wanted, etc. Or they'll say, Jews are all capitalists and rich, or they'll say, Jews are all communists and revolutionary socialists. Well, last time I checked, you can't be pushy and clannish, or a communist socialist and a capitalist at the same time. So to try to find the absurdity. I had a friend once who was sitting with some of her close friends from graduate school and nursing school, and these other women were from the Midwest, and they had really never encountered Jews before they became quite close with my friend, and they were sitting around having a lunch, I think, towards the end of their studies, and one of them was saying how much, going back to Nebraska, I think, and she said how much she was going to miss certain things in New York, particularly the bargains. And she turned to my friend, who was the only Jew at the table, and said, oh, Denise, you're really going to be interested in this because you can save a lot of money. And my friend, who was very quick, responded by saying, gee, I didn't know Jews were the only ones who were smart enough to want to try to save their hard-earned money. Which, the woman got it immediately, you know?
What was she thinking when she said that, I wonder? Was she trying to be funny, or was she really calling on the stereotype?
No, I wasn't there, but I think stereotypes get embedded. They get embedded in our imagination. You know, if someone came into the office and said, "Oh my God, I was walking home to the, or I was walking to the parking lot or my car or to the L or whatever it is late at night, and I was mugged," many people immediately will presuppose that the person who mugged you was black. These stereotypes get embedded that sometimes we're not even aware of them. We're not even aware that we're being racist. We're not even aware that we're being anti-Semitic.
I think that's especially true for people who are older, who lived in a culture where that attitude was more acceptable. Do you have much sympathy for the old uncle who says those things because he was alive in the 1940s when the sign specifically said no blacks in this swimming pool?
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a little more understanding because of the culture in which he was raised. But if he's been half awake, you know, in the past decades, he should know that things have changed. He should know that those
attitudes
are...
So we should still confront that uncle at the dinner table, then,
yeah,
at this Thanksgiving dinner you described.
Right, try to educate. But if you can't educate, if the person won't see it, then at least make it clear to the other people around the table that this kind of talk is not only unacceptable, but it leads to no good. It leads to prejudice. It leads to hatred. It leads to contempt. And as I say, every genocide begins with words. That's what, you know, that's been such a message at the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah.
In terms of prejudice, you know?
I have one last question for you about a word, and the word is racist, and it's not about Jews per se, although as we've discussed, mm-hmm. being loyal to America or a Jewish state has come into play, but there are plenty of people who are trying to get the Democratic candidates to label the president as a racist. They want them to use that word, and I wonder what advice you have to all of us on that issue right now. Is it important that we define Donald Trump that way, or express that he is not that? I mean, do we need to put that word into play?
I think better than labeling someone anti-Semite, racist, we look at what they've done. Have they enabled that hatred? Have they enabled that prejudice? What's in their hearts? I don't know what's in their hearts. I mean, Donald Trump did still, you know, the Central Park Five, those five young boys who were sat in jail for too long. And even after they were released and someone else was found, he was still saying, oh, they were guilty. He has said things and enabled things, and even as a president, he has certainly enabled anti-Semitic attitudes and anti-Semitic actions. So, you know, what's in your heart is between you and your cardiologist, you know. Let me see what you do. I'm going to judge you by what you do and not the label I'm going to pin on you. I think it's a much more productive way of operating. So that's what I would suggest.
In that sense,
what a person does.
In that sense, the president speaks with two minds then, doesn't he? Because he does label himself and do things that champion Israel, and yet he says things that are at odds with the things that you're describing right now.
Right. Well, yeah, I guess so. I mean, what is it? Consistency? You don't have to be consistent.
Yeah, he's consistently inconsistent, right. That's for sure.
Right.
Deborah
right.
Lipstadt. We are out of time, Deborah. I just wanted to mention some of the particulars about your upcoming visit. It's going to be September 9th at the Sheraton Grand Hotel. If you want to find out more about her talk, by the way, Rahm Emanuel will be the honoree. The governor is going to be there. Mayor Lori Lightfoot is going to be there. Tickets are available by visiting Midwest at U.S. Actually, by just visiting ushmm.org, or you can call 847-433-8099. But it sounds like a compelling talk you're going to give, and welcome to Chicago in advance. We're anxious for you to get here.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it.